Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Sometime in the next 2 weeks, maybe on Monday, the Supreme Court will issue its ruling on President Obama's Affordable Care Act. But the opponents of the law, Mitt Romney and the insurance industry among them, seem almost as nervous as the defenders and are beginning to reposition themselves in some curious ways. Let's talk about it with Julie Appleby, who covers healthcare and the insurance industry for Kaiser Health News. Julie, thanks for doing this. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
Maybe the biggest healthcare headline from this week is that three big insurance companies have announced that they will keep certain Obama reforms as company policy, no matter what the Supreme Court decides. Tell us, who's keeping what?
Well, it's very interesting, Brian. On Monday, United Healthcare came out and said, well, we're going to keep some of these provisions that are already in effect. Now, remember, much of the law doesn't go into effect until 2014, but some things are already in effect. So they said, we will continue to allow parents to keep their young adult children on their plans up to age 26. We will continue, not setting these lifetime dollar limits on health policies. And we will continue offering prevention visits, things like cancer screenings and certain vaccinations without a copay. A couple other things. They said they would no longer retroactively cancel policies, which is also barred in the law currently. So a few hours after United came out with their announcement, Aetna and Humana followed saying that they would keep all or most of those same promises no matter what the court rules.
Why would they do this? And we'll look at some of those particular policies and what they would actually mean. But why would they do this just when they might be smelling blood in the water and the possibility that these requirements to cover that they don't like will be thrown to the sharks by, Antonin Scalia and company?
Well, I think actually, the insurers are saying that keeping these on make good business sense. And in effect, they actually do, because a lot of these provisions that they singled out don't cost them a whole lot of money. They've already baked in, so to speak, the cost of them into their premiums that are existing. And they're very popular. These are items that poll very well among the public, even among people who say they don't like the overall health care law. So for some ways, it does make good business and public relations sense. But I think they're also looking at what might happen with the court, and the court may toss, as you know, all of the law, may toss part of the law, may not do anything at all, may uphold the whole law. So I think they're positioning themselves a little bit in case that happens.
And I think companies, as well as politicians, position themselves for inevitability sometimes. So if the court tosses all or part of the law, and the new Congress is going to have to come back and redebate what parts of it to keep or what parts of it to reformulate but reinstitute in some kind of way, the insurance industry probably wants to be out ahead of the rhetoric and say, well, look, we've already done the big things that we know the country was asking for, so don't give us any other onerous requirements. But let's look at the provisions in question a little more closely. No lifetime cap on benefits. Were people who thought they had good insurance simply using it up because their illnesses were expensive?
Well, this happened quite a bit before this went into effect. I mean, you might have a $1 million lifetime limit on your policy.
And that sounds like a lot.
That sounds like a lot of money. Right, right. But try having maybe a premature baby or having a serious heart condition that requires a heart transplant or some other thing like that. And then maybe you get cancer a couple years later. So it's not inconceivable. And lots of people hit those caps. The law bars that from going forward. And now these insurers have said that they will keep that in effect, no matter what the court rules.
Another one is no denials of coverage for pre-existing conditions. This is a very popular provision of the Obama law, but it seems to me, and tell me if you think I'm reading this right, that the companies have not adopted it whole. The Obama version, I believe, includes a whole community pricing structure known as community rating. The insurers are not promising that. In other words, they'll sell anyone with a pre-existing condition an insurance policy, but they might charge you an arm and a leg because of your individual risk profile rather than just charge everyone in the age group the same thing. Do I have that right?
Well, this is a really complicated area. So what the insurers are promising this week, these three, at least, they said that they will not actually, I think only two of them said they will not retroactively cancel a policy. This is a little bit different. This is an issue that happened quite a bit, got a lot of attention out in California. It's not a situation that probably happens in New York, and I'll explain that. But in California, for example, if you bought an individual policy, and this is almost true, this is true anywhere else in the country pretty much as well, you have to fill out a form. You've got to tell them all these things about what happened to you, what your health history was for the past 10 years, et cetera, et cetera. Then they decide if they're going to insure you or not and how much they're going to charge you. So some insurers in California were selling policies, and then somebody would get sick with something serious, and then they would go back and look through that person's medical records and find something that that person either did not put down on purpose or forgot. And it may not have anything to do with the illness they currently have, and they would be using that to cancel their policies retroactively. So that person then would owe money for their cancer or their heart attack or whatever it was that prompted this review. So the healthcare law bars that practice, and mm-hmm. that's in effect right now. The pre-existing conditions part takes effect for adults in 2014, and that says if you go to buy a policy, they can't reject you because you have some kind of a medical condition. That's already the law in New York. You are one of five states that have that. It's called guaranteed issue. So in New York, you already have that. But most states do not. So that does not kick into effect until 2014. But what United also said this week was that one of the other provisions says you can't reject children under 19 start right now if they have a pre-existing condition. And they said they understand the importance of that rule, but they, as a single insurer, can't go forward and say, well, we'll keep that provision in effect no matter what, because if they were the only ones that offered that, they would have a line out the door of parents wanting to cover their kids. And so they said it would have to be all of the industry sort of stepping forward to do that.
What qualifies as a pre-existing condition? How small does it have to be?
You know, I spoke with somebody once who said she was on a board in Maryland that reviewed some of these things, and she said they would have people rejected because they had acne. And this is because one of the drugs to treat acne is very, very expensive, Accutane. So they saw it for that, but it could be anything. Cancer, certainly, HIV, certainly, but it could be something very minor. It could be something like asthma, which can lead to a lot of hospitalizations and that type of thing. So it really, really varies, but it could be something very small to something very major. Some insurers will also offer coverage, but they will not cover that particular problem for a period of time. So they may say, well, we'll take you, but we won't cover that for a while.
Now, it's not just the insurance companies. Mitt Romney, too, is refining his health reform position ahead of the Supreme Court ruling. He gave a speech about it in Orlando this week in which he said this about one thing he would keep.
I also want to make sure that people can't get dropped if they have a pre-existing condition. What I mean by that. So let's say someone has been continuously insured and they develop a serious condition. And let's say they lose their job or they change jobs, they move and they go to a new place. I don't want them to be denied insurance because they've got some pre-existing condition. So we're going to have to make sure that the law we replace Obamacare with assures that people who have a pre-existing condition, who've been insured in the past, are able to get insurance in the future, so they don't have to worry about that condition keeping them from getting the kind of health care they deserve.
Romney talking health reform this week in Orlando. We're talking health reform with Julie Appleby, reporter for Kaiser Health News. A couple of things from that jump out at me, Julie. He talked in that clip specifically about people with pre-existing conditions who have been continually insured. Is that to exclude people from pre-existing conditions who aren't insured yet? And would that be different from the Obama law?
Well, there are not a lot of details on what exactly Mr. Romney is proposing, but the way it sounds, he sounds like it's very similar to an existing federal law, which is not the federal health care law that we're talking about before the court. It's a law from years earlier, commonly called HIPAA, the Health Insurance Accountability and Portability Act. And this law says that if you go from group coverage through your employer and then you lose your job or you change jobs or for some reason don't have your job or your insurance anymore, you can not be rejected if you then go to another insurance policy. But there are some serious caveats to that. You have to elect what's called COBRA, which is the way you can extend your coverage from your employer for 18 months, and you have to pay those premiums and exhaust your COBRA and then go on to another policy. So there are some caveats to that, and it only applies to people who have job-based coverage. It doesn't apply to somebody who is buying their own policy and then maybe switching plans. So it sounds like if his proposal goes forward, they would need to work out some details on, well, do they want to extend that to somebody who is continuously covered through their job or by just their own policy? And generally, they mean by continuously covered, at least the federal law says 63 days. You cannot go more than 63 days with a break in coverage, or then it's considered that you have not been covered.
And speaking of being covered by your employer, Romney also proposed tax changes in his Tuesday speech that I think suggests more than he says here. But here's the clip.
Right now, most people get their insurance through their employer. And the reason they do that is because their employer gets a tax deduction when they buy insurance for you. But if you're a very small business person, let's say a one-person business, you don't get a tax deduction for buying insurance. And if you're an individual that's not employed, you don't get a tax deduction for buying your own insurance. What I would do is level the playing field and say individuals can buy insurance on the same tax advantage basis that businesses can buy insurance.
So, level the playing field for individuals and small businesses. But his position on health reform, as I understand it in a broader context, suggests he might eliminate the tax benefit for employer-provided health benefits altogether and put people on a level playing field that way, taxing health benefits like other income. Is that your understanding? Have you looked at that? And how do you understand the clip in the speech that we just played?
You know, I haven't looked at that specifically for Mr. Romney's proposal on the tax changes, but that is something that has been discussed over the years. Should employers get this tax break? What would happen if the tax break was no longer allowed? And many benefit analysts think that if the tax break was removed, that fewer employers would offer coverage and that more people would end up buying their own coverage.
Which, as a matter of politics, is what Republicans generally believe would be better for the country, right? Trying to shift health insurance from the employer to the individual, the opposite of socialized medicine. Do they think libertarian medicine would really wind up with more people insured, not less?
Well, I don't know if they think that or not, but what would happen is people would then be put into this position we were just talking about buying their own insurance. So then they would face some of these obstacles that are out there in the individual market currently that the healthcare law addresses in the future. But, you know, could they get coverage? Could they buy it? Would they be rejected? Could they afford it? So they would need to go on the individual market, which right now, Brian, is a very small percentage of the overall insured population. Something like 18 million people buy their own coverage. The vast majority of people who have coverage in this country are covered through their employer. So this is a very important issue that will be discussed if this goes along. But these folks, if their employer does decide to stop offering coverage, or when they do, under current law, many employers have decided they don't want to offer coverage anymore, they then have this choice to make about whether they're going to buy it themselves on the individual market.
So one more Romney clip. If we're all going to go out as individuals and buy insurance on the individual market someday, or if more of us are, one would want to shop in as broad a marketplace as possible for competition and price and quality. And here's something Romney had to say about how.
I want these individuals and businesses to be able to buy insurance across state lines, get the best deal they can get anywhere in the country. And I wanted to be able to join associations of like types of organizations so they can get bargaining power, purchasing power, and get insurance at a reasonable rate.
So that sounds like common sense, be able to buy across state lines and join associations and buy in bulk for group prices. Is that not in the Obamacare law, and do Democrats oppose that for some reason?
Well, these are not new ideas. These have been around for quite some time. They're generally Republican ideas, sometimes not always exclusively Republican ideas, but Brian, they don't cover nearly as many people as would the health care law if it remains in effect. It's expected to cover up to 33 million people who are not currently insured. These are much smaller. They have been tried in the past in some cases. Association health plans have been around for a long time. They often tend to be more expensive than people think because they end up with some of the same problems on the individual market that others do. They attract perhaps people who are sicker or older and can't get coverage elsewhere, so they tend to be more expensive. But it's been tried before. It might be tried again. They are not going to solve the problem for the vast majority of people who are uninsured.
All right. Mitt Romney and some big insurance companies repositioning themselves for the post-Supreme Court ruling world, whatever that turns out to be, on the Affordable Care Act. Will be ready on Monday if they release that decision at 10 o'clock, which they might. They release decisions Mondays and Thursdays at 10 o'clock in June, so this may be the first thing on our show for next week. But we thank Julie Appleby, reporter for Kaiser Health News, for giving us a little more background on what the new world is going to be. Thank you very much.
Thanks.